If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
So here's Steve Brassati, who is our favorite paleontologist and author. Hi, Steve. Welcome back to WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. It's always a pleasure to talk to you when I'm back home in the Chicago area.
Yeah, right. So are you in Ottawa, Illinois right now?
I'm in Champaign. So, I mean, I'm from Ottawa. I grew up in Ottawa. But my family's all moved over to Champaign now. So when we come and visit, we try to go to Champaign and go to Ottawa. And, of course, I try to do talks and do book events and so on in both places whenever I'm back home. And that's what I'm doing this weekend in Ottawa, doing a talk on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Abbey. If you visit OttawaCenter.com, you'll find out more about his visit. OttawaCenter.org. Steve Brassati, 2 to 4 o'clock Sunday at the Abbey, where he'll be, I guess, giving a talk. You're not going to talk for two solid hours, are you, Steve?
Oh, I hope not. No, my goodness. I mean, no, the plan is, so I have a new book, of course, that I have to hawk and have to pitch and have to try to sell. But we're going to do a conversation about the book. So I'm going to be there with Kane Farabaugh, who's also from Ottawa, who's a longtime reporter for Voice of America. And he's going to be having a conversation with me, and we're going to talk about birds, and we're going to talk about dinosaurs. That's the subject of the story of birds of the book, but we're going to talk about that connection, how modern birds really are dinosaurs. But we're also going to talk about, more generally, paleontology and science and my route into studying fossils and the kind of fossils that we have here in Illinois and the places you can go to learn more about dinosaurs locally.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You wrote about dinosaurs, New York Times bestseller, another bestseller with mammals. I was reading the reviews of your latest book. I just saw that you were going to be in the area, so I haven't picked up your latest, The Story of Birds. But New Scientist said Brassati is 3 for 3, and all of the reviews are great. A book that runs to 500 pages about the evolution of birds, and yet you make this engaging. You make this for the popular masses as well as being true to the science. And that's been said about your other two books, which I very much enjoyed, about mammals and about dinosaurs. So why birds? I thought you had everything. I thought you wrote your last book with the last one. I thought it was mammals and dinosaurs. How did birds come up in your radar?
Well, I don't ever want to say it'll be the last book, you know, so I always have to have a new one on the go. And for me, birds was a natural one to move on to, because birds today, there are birds all around us, over 10,000 species of birds. We know them, we see them, we hear them. A lot of us keep birds as pets. We go bird watching, we eat chicken, we eat Thanksgiving turkey. I mean, birds are just omnipresent, but they are dinosaurs. And to me, that's always been fascinating, that we have this last vestige of the dinosaur empire living in the world today. And after writing about dinosaurs and writing about mammals, it just felt natural to write about birds, especially because they're also, in many ways, you know, birds are my scientific bread and butter. Way back when, my PhD dissertation was about the connection between dinosaurs and birds and building a family tree, understanding the ancestors of birds, which dinosaurs they came from. So it seemed like the most natural thing to do, and I've always felt like this idea that birds are dinosaurs, this is an old idea. You know, this is not some brazen, bombastic new theory. This is something that goes back to the 1860s. Charles Darwin himself wrote about the connection between dinosaurs and birds, yet there's been a lot of debate about it over time. It went out of fashion for a while. It's come back. We now know that this is true. We have fossils of dinosaurs covered in feathers. So as scientists, we now know this dinosaur-bird connection is true, but I don't think it's really broken through to the pop culture, you know, in the same way as maybe some other scientific theories. And I think there's still a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of uncertainty. You see a bird, I know it doesn't look anything like a T-Rex or a Brontosaurus, so that leads people to question this. So I wanted to write a book that would talk all about where birds came from, how they really are dinosaurs, what the evidence is for that, but then to take the story forward to the modern day to show how these last surviving dinosaurs have made it to today and all the incredible things they've done along the way.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did that. You know, we played a little clip from a video you did on the show earlier today just to sort of promote the fact that you were coming on. And it was one of your talks, and it's where you said that the greatest mass extinction of all was where the volcanoes ripped open the earth and lava poured out and gases came off and killed 90 to 95% of all living creatures. And then you said salamanders and lizards were the only survivors. And I thought, so does that mean that then cows and dogs and human beings and everything is sort of an ancestor of the lizards that survived that mass extinction 250 million years ago?
Yeah, this mass extinction, this was the biggest one ever. This is the closest life has ever come to completely being snuffed out over the 4.5 billion year history of the Earth. And this extinction happened, as you say, about 250 million years ago. It was caused by these enormous volcanoes that erupted in what's now Russia. And these were not normal volcanoes that we're used to. These were basically fissures in the Earth, like Grand Canyon size chasms in the earth that opened up and spewed out lava for millions of years. And that led to extreme climate change, runaway global warming, all sorts of chaos, and maybe 90 or 95% of all species died out. But there were a few plucky survivors, and among those survivors were some reptilian creatures, little things that would have scurried around, their bodies covered in scales. They would have hid away very easily. They would not have been very big, in-your-face, top-of-the-food-chain creatures. But from those survivors eventually came the mammals of today and the reptiles and the birds of today and even the dinosaurs. This extinction was before there were even dinosaurs. So this thing that happened, this catastrophe, you know, so long ago, it shaped the world today.
I enjoyed the notion that you said eventually dinosaurs came onto the scene, but they were no bigger than a cat. You said you could have held one of them in your arms. And I could just imagine having a little baby dinosaur in my arms as a pet or something. But obviously they got bigger. The animals evolved. Just tell me what I need to know briefly about how we went from dinosaurs to birds. Was there another cataclysm or some bizarre offshoot, some anomalous development that then became birds? How did we get birds?
Yeah, well, I'll give you the Cliff Note version. Of course, if you want the full story, you can read the story of birds, of course. But really what happened was dinosaurs, way back when, evolved feathers as simple little hairy things to help keep their bodies warm. Later on, some dinosaurs elaborated those feathers, turned them into wings, which were actually display structures, advertising billboards sticking off their arms to attract mates. And then later on, those wings were repurposed, reinvented as airfoils. So birds emerged from dinosaurs over many tens of millions of years of slow evolution. And by 150 million years ago, there were real, true birds flapping their wings, flying over the heads of other dinosaurs, and birds just so happen to be the only dinosaurs that survived the asteroid that killed off T-Rex and Triceratops and the rest.
I wonder what it was like for that first dinosaur who thought, you know, with these feathers, if I just move my arms up and down, I can fly. What a revelation that must have been for that first dinosaur who became a bird. How about that?
I mean, imagine, you know, you'd be the pioneer, right? And just imagine just the access, the opportunities, the new abilities you would have. You could suddenly move around in the air a little bit. And it would have taken time. It's not like a raptor dinosaur would have morphed into an eagle one day. The first flyers would have been awkward. But over time, they would have been shaped into these fantastic, dynamic, active, energetic, soaring birds that we all know today. And when you look out the window and you see a bird, whether it is a majestic eagle or whether it's a pigeon, you're looking at a dinosaur. You're looking at a real, true dinosaur, a member of the dinosaur family tree. That's what I really want to convey in the story of birds in the book. And that's certainly what I'm going to try to to nail home this weekend when I'm in Ottawa on Sunday talking in my hometown about paleontology and about fossils.
Is there a bird that you find most fascinating or is your favorite as you've studied these?
Yeah, there's my favorite bird is, it's called a goldcrest. And we don't have them here in Illinois, but they're back in Europe. So I live in Scotland now. I teach at the University of Edinburgh, and I've lived there quite a while. Obviously, I haven't gotten the accent. But this is the smallest bird we have in Scotland, the smallest bird in all of Europe, just the size of a golf ball. It weighs about as much as a single grape, and they are such beautiful birds. They're great parents. We have a nest outside our window at home, and so there'd be mornings I'd be getting my little boy breakfast, making his oatmeal, making his cereal, and this mother goldcrest would be darting around the window, getting food for her babies, and I just became charmed with those birds then, and they are my favorite birds right now. My second favorite dinosaurs, I must say. T-Rex will always be my favorite dinosaur. That's because of Sue at the Field Museum. I was 16 years old when Sue was put on display. But my second favorite dinosaur is a modern-day bird, the size of a golf ball. T-Rex and that bird are in the same family. Isn't that wild? They are both dinosaurs. And that, to me, is what's so fascinating about dinosaurs, the great variety, the great diversity. They've been the biggest animals that have ever lived on land, but they've also been some of the smallest, the most delicate, the most beautiful in the terms of birds, and I just think that's fantastic.
Just a couple more questions for you, Steve, and then I'll let you get back to your family there in Champaign. Steve Brusati is on a phone line, and his latest book is The Story of Birds, and he's going to be talking about that from 2 to 4 o'clock Sunday at the Ottawa Center. Go to ottawacenter.org to find out more. That's a nice little event space they have there, and they do interviews and artistic productions there. So that's at the Abbey Sunday from 2 to 4. As a consultant on the Jurassic Park films, does it bother you that, how realistic, how accurate is any of the presentation of dinosaurs? And if they go off script, if you will, does that bother you because it's not true to science?
So I am the consultant, the paleontology consultant for the franchise now. I've worked on the last two films, Jurassic World Dominion a few years ago, and then Jurassic World Rebirth, which came out last summer. And my job is to consult. I'm basically there. I'm on retainer. Anytime that the director, the writers, the artists want to know anything about dinosaurs, they get in touch. And we have a lot of calls. We exchange a lot of emails. I see a lot of drafts of the designs of the dinosaurs they're developing. And I just see it as my job to make sure that the science is represented. You know, these are not science documentaries. We know that. Science documentaries don't make $1 billion at the box office. You know, these are summer Hollywood blockbuster sci-fi monster movies, and that's fine. I love them. I've been a fan of the franchise ever since the first one came out, and I saw it in Ottawa in the cinema with my dad, with my brothers back when I was 9 years old. So, no, I just appreciate that the films, they've always respected the science. They've always had science advisors. And I think that's pretty cool because they don't have to do that. You know, not every sci-fi movie you see has scientists working on it behind the scenes. So I know what my role is, and I try to do my best to make sure the science is represented. And we see some very accurate, very realistic, very cool dinosaurs in the films now, even dinosaurs with feathers. And more so than any book I could ever write, it's getting dinosaurs with feathers into Jurassic World films that will really show people around the world this connection between dinosaurs and birds.
Yeah. One last question. One of our listeners, Brendan, says, what about pterodactyls? Those would be flying dinosaurs, right?
Brendan, good question. I wish I had my six-year-old Anthony on the phone. He's at day camp now with his cousins here in Champaign. But Anthony would tell you, yeah, I know. Some of the books I have at school say that pterodactyls are dinosaurs, but actually they're not dinosaurs. They're a different group of reptiles. They're cousins of dinosaurs, but they're not actually dinosaurs or birds. They're a totally different group of reptiles that also did fly, and they lived during the time of the dinosaurs, and they went extinct when the asteroid hit 66 million years ago. But although you see them in dinosaur books and on dinosaur posters and in dinosaur toy sets, not actually dinosaurs. That's a bit of trivia you can remember. Maybe it'll turn up in Trivial Pursuit one day or something like that.
Right, right, exactly. And cave and human beings, as we know them, or our ancestors, they never intersected with any of these animals, right?
No, they didn't. So all the classic dinosaurs, the T-Rexes, Triceratops, the ones with the long necks and the ones with the duckbills and the horns and the armor and all of those, they died when this enormous asteroid hit the Earth 66 million years ago. The only ones that survived were some birds, which led to the birds of today. So our ancestors never saw a T-Rex. Thank God, I would say. I don't think we want to deal with a bus-sized super predator that crushes the bones of its prey. We never saw a triceratops or a big long-necked dinosaur, but we do have birds today, and I think we, you know, frankly should appreciate them more as these animals that carry on the legacy of dinosaurs. When you see a gull or a pigeon or a sparrow, even these common birds we see every day, those are real-life dinosaurs. They have dinosaur DNA. They have, you know, velociraptor blood in their veins, if you want to be poetic about it. They are very much a part of the dinosaur family. They're a legacy that survives from that long-gone dinosaur empire.
Read The Story of Birds. The reviews are in, and they say he's done it again. Steve Borsatti, who got you The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, The Rise and Reign of the Mammals, is now writing about birds Sunday at the Abbey in Ottawa from 2 to 4. Steve, continue to write and continue to come back to the USA and Illinois. It's nice to talk to you today.
Always a pleasure, John. Thank you. And I've always loved being back in my hometown where I grew up and getting chances to write these books and talk about it here locally. It really is very touching. So thanks as always for having me on.